Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us in another episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. My name is Mira, and I will be your host for today's show. With me today is the author of The Elemental Workplace, Neil Usher. How are you today, Neil?
Yes, good, thank you. Good.
It's great to have you here on the podcast, and we're very happy to have you come in and talk about the books and some of the themes and ideas behind it. Now, for those listening, Neil has over 25 years experience within the property profession, within strategy, development, transactions, workplace creation, change programs, capital projects, and operational management. He is a regular conference and academic speaker and occasional performance poet. We're very happy to have him here today on the podcast. And without further delay, let's get into today's questions, Neil. And the first one is the one I ask anyone that comes on. And that's what actually inspired you to become an author.
Thanks for inviting me today. Delighted to be talking to you today. I've loved writing for as long as I can remember. A lot of the times it was lyrics, poems. Technically, I still have a publishing deal with Chrysalis Music, although my last royalty statement was actually 5p, so it's probably it's probably less than that these days. I used to watch all of the punk poets in the late 70s, early 80s, John Cooper Clark, Tiller the Stockbroker, Benjamin Zephaniah, those sorts of people, and was really inspired to not just to write, but also to perform work as well. That led to writing song lyrics, and only really in a sort of quasi-amateur capacity. And I'd always thought I'd like to write a book. I guess I was convinced it was going to be a novel. I wrote half a novel once and then scrapped it because I didn't like it or lost the thread. But I think really with sort of suddenly being, well, not so much suddenly, but being in a position where I wasn't in sort of corporate employment anymore, all of the excuses for not writing a book vanished. I had the time. I had the subject matter, had the inclination, so there was the sort of the way was clear.
Yeah, and looking at the book, something that really sticks out for me is the actual title, The Elemental Workplace. Can you perhaps tell us what is the actual concept behind it? How do we create one?
It's all about things being simple, attainable, achievable. Our sort of industry, and when I say industry, I really mean the sort of the wider workplace industry, so sort of strategy, design, creation of workplaces, gets involved in some fairly lengthy debates about some of the underlying concepts and sort of tends to talk itself in and out of holes. And one of my sort of soapbox talks, if you like, for many years was like, this is actually quite straightforward. It's quite straightforward to get the majority of the way towards creating a fantastic workplace. It doesn't matter where you are, what your budget is, what your intended work style or outcome is. There still has to be a design process in there, but to focus on some very simple core components will actually guarantee you a significant degree of success in doing that. So originally, probably 2012, 2013, sketched out what I thought were the key elements and then set about testing those with in a live audience environment. So instead of doing a conference talk, I'd stand there with two whiteboards and a whole series of pens and would try and work with the audience participants in terms of trying to identify what they thought were the important components in a workplace. And what I tended to find was that the majority of those kept cropping up. So I realised through this sort of process of continually testing it with different sectors, not just the workplace sector, did a lot of work in human resources areas as well, that actually it was quite possible to create a framework, which then became the elements and appeared in this little periodic table that we find in the book, by saying, look, focus on these things and you have a really good chance of success. So it's all about simplification, creating a portable framework, the irrespective of the sort of the style, the location, the culture, the background, the sector, that is ultimately transportable and usable anywhere.
Yeah, and something that I was thinking about is kind of the very regular approach when it comes to creating a workplace, which is the well-known cubicles, rows of desks, and a lot of the let's say layouts that we're all familiar with. But that led me to thinking, why is it so important to have an environment that's different to all these well-known, established ways of doing it? How does it make a difference?
It's interesting. The sort of design of workplace has been on its own sort of historical journey, really, since then. There's a lot of, you'll find a lot of photos from the 1920s of sort of people sitting in very regular rows with typewriters and the supervisor or manager at the end. Buildings like the Time and Life Building were classic examples of that. Through the sort of 1950s, where where we sort of started to, where people started to move into private offices. Then we had Bürolandschaft in the late 50s and the 60s, where suddenly people were looking at space in a more organic way. That lost its thread and its way a little bit and ended up sort of creating cubicle farms. And then with a lot more sort of mobile technology available, people started to move into more open spaces. We've tended to follow that journey collectively along the way. So there's been a sort of prevailing trend at the time and through the whole of that history. What I'm really trying to say with the elemental workplace is that it almost doesn't matter what style you adopt, because in some instances, rows of white desks disappearing into the distance might actually be the right thing for your organisation. Cubicles might be the right thing for your organisation if that works. There's a need to understand what's going to work for the organisation rather than just simply following what's just appeared in, you know, the list of the top 10 coolest workplaces in the world and how many of those have you seen on the internet these days, or just following fashion. So what I'm saying with the elemental workplace is you have to do what's right for your organisation and go through a process of understanding that. If you want something entirely different, that's fine too. I think what happened with spaces like Google in its earlier days with the installation of slides and things, but it actually taught us that it's quite possible to think expansively about the workplace, that it doesn't have to be the way it is at present. So I'm not necessarily suggesting by any means that anyone follows that as a potential route to creating a workplace. What I'm saying is we're in an era now where there is a, you know, the sort of the end-to-end options available are quite vast really compared to where they used to be. So what we're seeing now is a lot more variety and a lot more hybrid installations, a bit of open space, a bit of sort of focused quiet space, a bit of collaborative space. The sort of things like you've got out in your reception here in the record hall with the cafe space where, you know, I sat amongst several meetings going on. You know, we've got a lot more available to us now in terms of thinking and options. You still need to go through a process to arrive at that, and you still need to make that relevant to the organisation you're working for.
Yeah, and something that I'd like to focus on a bit is actually the negative side and the negative impacts of a badly designed workplace, because I feel that it can be quite a broad range of things that can impact workers and anyone, you know, within the building itself. What are these negative impacts of a badly designed workplace?
Whenever I'm asked about this, I just can't help thinking about my first ever job, because it was probably the most depressing, soul-crushing, spirit-crushing workplace I'd ever stepped into. And having come from a really vibrant university environment, which was very social and very open and, you know, sort of campus environment to an office, you almost think, oh my God, you know, is this what it's all about? Is this what I've worked for to get to this? And I think probably even before I got into the property industry, that first experience has stayed with me right throughout. So when I eventually sort of came round to having a chance to influence workplace outcomes, I've never been able to shift that first impression and that first feeling. And it went right through to my core, really, in terms of the sort of the absolutely negative effect on the human spirit, almost more than anything else, really. So when we look at what the negative effects are, really are the inverse of sort of, you know, why creating a fantastic workplace can have a positive effect on people. If it's depressing, if it gets in your way, if it doesn't function properly, if the technology doesn't function properly, if there are no amenities and you have to sort of, you know, you have to sort of walk for half a mile to get a cup of tea somewhere, you know, all of those things. If they all combine together, then it's going to affect your spirit, it's going to affect your ability to do your work, and inevitably then will affect the ability of the organisation to achieve what it's setting out to do. So it affects you, it affects the organisation, kind of affects everyone really, everyone you interact with. You know, you'll leave miserable in the morning and you'll come home miserable, and you'll bring that misery into your family and social life too. So it's broader than just the impact on the workplace. It potentially can actually sort of have a negative effect on us as human beings.
Now, can you give us some examples of great workplaces? Because we've established the impact of negative ones, yeah. But you must have come, you know, across your work to some magnificent places and you know, worked on some of them as well. Did any stick out for you?
So am I allowed to mention any of my own?
Absolutely, yeah.
I've about a year ago completed a project out in West London for Sky Central, which was part of the whole sort of Sky's workplace transformation initiative. It was a building for 3,500 people, and sort of set up in a fully agile way with lots of fantastic amenities within the workplace. The opportunity to work on that enabled me to bring all of that sort of research and experience and to bear, really, along with the opportunity to create something new. But a lot of that style of workplace on that scale, with that degree of sort of amenity-rich and open and sort of collaborative environment, I'd seen quite a lot of in Australia, where for many years they've been leading the way, mainly in the financial sector. I think a lot of people, when they think about cool workplaces now, or functional workplaces, or interesting workplaces, will always consider sort of West Coast. They always assume that it's something to do with the large technology organisations. But actually, the root of most of the sort of really inspiring workplaces we see today was actually in Australia, in the financial sector, where they had a real problem attracting younger people to the industry. So the sort of activity-based workplaces that I saw at places like Commonwealth Bank in Sydney, which housed about 4,000 people at the time, were a radical reappraisal of the workplace. They really did change the game. And so I used to sort of go to these places and think, will anyone ever do this sort of thing in the UK? You know, will I ever get the chance to do something like this or work on something like this? So the opportunity to go and do that at Sky was just something I couldn't turn down at all. It was a almost probably a once in a lifetime thing. So I'm very proud of that. I think the sort of the changes it brought about to people's appreciation of what going to work and working in an office building meant were significant, and you know, got a huge sense of satisfaction from that too. But you know, in terms of others, a couple of I would probably sort of bring out. One is the Estée Lauder building in London. The reason I love that is because it smells beautiful. It's the loveliest smelling workplace I think I've ever been in. And I talk about the sort of sensory experience in the book. And we very often don't consider scent or how the workplace smells. If you ask most people how their workplace smells, you probably get some fairly unsavoury responses. But you know, it's because of all the brand stations in the building, all of which have a sort of a component that is scent. It really is a fantastic sort of sensory experience in there, and it's a very comfortable place too. And another one that I'd bring out really in terms of sort of co-working centres and flexible workplaces, you're in a similar sort of thing here. I think the Huckletree space in Finsbury Square is fantastic. You know, I've seen quite a lot of these co-working spaces. That was just really dynamic. There's loads of energy in there. I think the design was superb, and I'd be quite happy to sort of pick up my laptop and go and get a coffee and sit in there and work for a while. So, you know, these are just a few examples really of different genres of space and different types of space. But I think we always have to be aware of looking under the skin. I think that's the, you know, our first impressions obviously count. But I think sometimes it's quite possible to have a great looking workspace that if I then applied my elemental standard to it, which is at the back of the book, which is a very simple self-assessment tool that anyone can use. It takes about 5-10 minutes to work out whether you've got a good workplace or not. You know, some of those may well fail that test because they look great, but they don't function in the right way, or they're not sort of built on the right foundations. We always gravitate towards the aesthetic. It's just a natural human trait, so we always sort of work out whether we think it looks great or not, or feels good. But these spaces absolutely have to work, which is why, you know, technology always sits at the core of that, because you can work in a fairly average or poor workplace for a period of time with great connectivity and great technology, but you can't do that the other way around. So very often what we see when we walk into a workplace is not necessarily always what's going on.
And there's something you said there that I'd like to briefly go back on. And you mentioned that out of all the places that you saw this great innovation, it was the banking sector within Australia. Now, do you think that there are perhaps any specific sectors or industries that tend to be more adventurous than others? I mean, there was this, like you said, conception that perhaps it was, you know, the kind of Silicon Valley, you know, tech firms that do this. But in fact, it was something completely different. Is this a common misconception in general? Are there any other exceptions?
I think in the last 5 years or so, sort of the world has kind of started playing a little bit more to type. But I think beyond 5 years ago, yes, it was probably the sectors that you would least expect that were working the hardest to do something positive about their workplace, because they needed to make it a tool for attracting and retaining staff. So the banking sector in Australia, or probably rather call it the finance sector in Australia, is a little broader than just banking, but they were having real trouble bringing young people into the business. It wasn't deemed a sort of an aspirational career path. But suddenly, with amenity-rich spaces that looked great, that worked really well, that were, you know, built on sort of very social focal points, suddenly they didn't offer too much of a distinction between the sort of university environments that people were in and commercial environments. I mentioned a little earlier the sort of the rude shock that I had in going into an office environment from university the first time round. That sort of transition is much easier now, much more seamless in terms of the way people work and the way the choices they have available to them in the way they work. So I think there was one of the finance heads from one of these organisations on a YouTube interview several years ago. I'm afraid I can't point it to you point at it because I can't find it anymore. And he was saying, look, we've saved millions of dollars in real estate costs, and you know it's brought everybody together, which has been great, and we've disposed of loads of properties. But the single biggest contribution is that it suddenly made banking cool again. And so, yes, it's very easy to think that it's the tech sector that is the leader in all of this. But, you know, if you were to look around, particularly in urban centres, advertising and media industries, you'd find most of those in fairly interesting workplaces these days. Because I say that it's sort of since then, really, the most industries have started playing to type. As in, if you were going to work for a small advertising company, you'd expect it to be somewhere quite interesting. You wouldn't expect it to be in a sort of grey or beige back office somewhere with rusty filing cabinets and, you know, a teaspoon on a bit of string. You just wouldn't expect that anymore. So the world's kind of catching up a little bit. The large West Coast organisations, obviously, that we referenced, they're going to create amazing workplaces because they've been very savvy about the fact that they can use it as part of their brand. The sort of your concept of what a workplace is like for most of these organisations, you know, it's you've got enough from what you've seen online or heard talk about to form a picture in your mind. They've created that brand association quite successfully for most people. You think about going to work for one of these companies, you're going to expect to walk into a really interesting workplace. I think you'd be amazingly stunned if you walked in and it wasn't, because they've sort of sown that through the representation of those organisations in the ether. You know, their sort of digital presence has helped to create
this brand almost, which is very fascinating.
And they've worked that hard and they've been very successful with that.
Great. And the last question here is the one I ask anyone that comes on the podcast, and that's, what are you currently reading?
I've just finished The Circle, which surprised me actually that it came out probably, I think it was 2013. I thought it was a little more relevant than that. And I thoroughly recommend anyone interested in sort of where organisations might go reading it. I know it's a film now, but as I say, always read the book, which was fascinating. It was probably the first book for some time that I wasn't really able to put down, and every spare 5 minutes I was reading it. So that was good. And it's actually formed the basis of a few sort of blog posts and things that I'm going to publish, really around sort of what potentially can go wrong when we think about sort of openness and transparency in the workplace. So it's probably classified as a workplace kind of book. It would be on a workplace reading list. There's not a lot of books in the world that would feature on that list, but that definitely does. Elsewhere, I just before that I finished a book called The Spectre of Alexander Wolf by a Russian author, Gazdanov, and I wrote my original sort of undergraduate thesis on Dostoevsky, so I've always had this sort of underlying thirst for sort of Russian, darker Russian literature. It's probably about as close as you get to Dostoevsky really these days. And
That's an achievement in itself.
Yeah, it was a really good yarn, so I enjoyed that. And this morning I was recommended a book called Why the Future is Workless by a chap called Tim Dunlop. So I'm going to do the old-fashioned thing and go and find a bookshop after this and go and buy that. So try to mix up a little bit of sort of a little bit of fiction with a bit of sort of business reading. And, you know, probably like most people, I've got fairly short attention span these days. So I read a lot of blog posts and follow a number of those sort of relevant to what I do.
Great. And for those listening, if that sounds interesting, we'll have links in the description where you can find out more about these books. And if you want to go and, you know, get in touch with your Dostoevsky side and be inspired, by all means, do so. But with that, I would like to thank you very much for joining us today, Neil. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on.
Thank you very much indeed. It's been delighted to be here. Thank you.
And to our listeners, if you enjoyed what we talked about today, in the description below, you can find links for all relevant information about The Elemental Workplace and, of course, about Neil. You can see what he's up to and his social media profiles as well. But I would like to thank you very much for joining us on this week's podcast of Lyd Radio. And we very much look forward to seeing you next week.